Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up?
Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening to the show. Thanks so much for making this part of your day. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd, alongside the absolutely stunning and talented Joy Taylor, who has a new show on Caffeine, which started Wednesday.
Thank you, Doug.
Are you currently on Caffeine, regular Caffeine, not the app Caffeine?
I have not started my Caffeine intake yet. It's right here. I have a whole system. So I have tea in the morning.
Yes.
So that I'm not caffeinated all day and don't crash.
Like it.
So I'm pretty good in the morning.
Yeah.
Until I get to, like, right now, and then I'm like,
then and then by the time we get to you with the news, you're back.
Yep.
You're back.
Just
great.
Just like that.
Thanks so much for welcoming me in there, Joy. I appreciate it. And listen, we have a great show for you. Tony Allen's going to join us. Sean Porter's going to join us, get you ready for the Wilder Fury fight, which I believe Colin is going to. You going to the fight on Saturday as well?
I am. I leave tomorrow.
Awesome. So, look, that's a big time event, and we'll talk about a heavyweight championship that people care about. It is good. Life is good when that happens. There are some misconceptions about the new collective bargaining agreement, which has been agreed to by the owners, not by the players. We'll get to that during the show, but I wanted to start with this. You know, the Dallas Cowboys are a team that are talked about on every radio show, local and national. The Dallas Cowboys clearly have a talented roster. And if you look at gross stats, the number one offense in the National Football League. They have a quarterback who, by anyone's estimation, however good you think Dak Prescott is, Dak Prescott has been underpaid by the team during his NFL career because where he was selected in the draft. And if you know about the old collective bargaining agreement, it wasn't that the Cowboys didn't want to give him any money. There was no opportunity to pay him any more money than he was already being paid. So he made it up in endorsements. So the Cowboys, well, they want to re-sign Dak. They want us to re-sign Amari Cooper. They can't franchise tag Dak if they want to franchise tag Amari Cooper. If they franchise tag Dak, Amari Cooper could potentially walk out the door. And then, of course, you have Byron Jones, some other players they want to re-sign, and then they have to fit it all within the magical salary cap structure. Then I heard this from Tua Tagovailoa, of course, many people's number one player in the draft coming into the season, a season in which he was having a great year, but he suffered through an ankle injury and then the really devastating hip injury that he's recovering from now. Take a listen.
Have you started thinking about where you could end up or how this could play out?
We've looked at teams, you know, we've talked about teams, we've talked to teams. Somebody might trade up and you could possibly drop or you could possibly go higher. We've been talking about all those scenarios. If you're saying to me, if I could choose what team I want to play on as far as my favorite team growing up, then I'd probably tell you the Cowboys.
Well, that seat's occupied. Or is it? Okay, so I want you to understand this is not a one-for-one, okay? This is not a one-for-one. And what happens with trades a lot of times is we think of just players and trades and how all that works, but there is the magic of salaries. Let's just say that Detroit says, hey, we have to win. We have to win now. We would love to draft Tua, but we'd like to get a bunch of assets in this draft. And we could trade that number three pick to the Dallas Cowboys. You want to include Jalen Smith? We'll take your star defensive, star linebacker. You want to include a couple more picks? Sure. This year's first rounder, next year's first round pick. Now, I'm not saying you trade Dak Prescott. I'm saying you let Dak Prescott potentially walk. Right? And here's the logic behind it. If you can pull off a trade that lands you Tua Tagovailoa, one, you could be better off in terms of his ceiling. Now, a lot of this depends upon his hip. But as good as Dak Prescott has been, it's a surprise how effective he's been in the National Football League. Whereas Tua, if you ask pundit upon pundit upon pundit upon analyst, they may say, well, he's gotten hurt in college because he's tried to run. He's not as athletic as maybe advertised. Everyone says he's bright. He's obviously a very good leader. He's tough. He's smart. He's incredibly accurate. And if you want to tell me that Dak Prescott's awesome, that's fine. I saw him against the Philadelphia Eagles on the road. And you can, you know, the Cowboys fans will say, well, you know, they don't have very good defense this year. Okay. Okay. We'll get to that in a second. But I should point out that it wasn't the defense that scored 9 points against the Eagles. It wasn't the defense that scored on the opening drive of the first half and second half against the Bears and couldn't move the ball outside of that. It wasn't the defense, granted, it was in a monsoon, but the defense didn't score 9 points against the Patriots. The offense lit up the Redskins. The offense lit up the Rams. These are non-playoff teams, the Giants. The offense lit up the Redskins, the Giants, the Dolphins. They beat up on the bad teams, and against the good teams, there was a struggle. Some of it had to be play calling. Some of it had to be coaching. But some of it had to be quarterback play. And then when you factor in the money you would save if you simply move Dak Prescott, potentially, let's say, $32 to $36 million off the books, whatever that looked like in the salary cap, the number three spot, like Quinnen Williams last year, right? It's like $8 million a year. It'd be $9 million probably this year. And think about it. If you're going to save $20 million, potentially getting as good or a better quarterback, would you take that risk? Because the Dallas Cowboys are a talented team. Dak Prescott statistically had a good year, and all it got you was 8 wins. If Jerry Jones wants to tell the world that he's a gambler, that he's a gunslinger, he's an old cowboy, that he's willing to take risks, why not take that risk? Why not? Everyone's been, you can easily be critical of the Cowboys not pouncing on the opportunity they had over the past couple years when they had a quarterback who was classically underpaid. You could have the same thing. You could hit reboot. You could hit refresh and start with a quarterback who is far more advanced in terms of understanding defenses and offenses at this level as opposed to Dak, who wasn't really a drop back passer until maybe his last year at Mississippi State. And look at the immediate success they were able to have. Why? Because they supported him with a great offensive line, great run game. That still exists. And you can use that money to continue to improve the defense, which will only help your overall team. And you have him locked into that salary for the first 4 years. Is it a risk? Absolutely. But there's also risk in standing pat because so many things went right this year and they still only won 8 games. In years past, we've seen Dak Prescott's ceiling. When Zeke was suspended, couldn't get to the playoffs. Before they had Amari Cooper, couldn't move the football. That doesn't mean that every quarterback doesn't need weapons. He does. But the idea that he can carry a franchise, especially one that will be depleted because of the contract that he's likely to earn or likely to be given with his next contract, it just boggles the mind. They couldn't win consistently with him on a minimal couple million dollar deal. What makes you think they can field a good team around him when he's making top of the market money? The Cowboys have their out. Okay? They have their out. They never have to pay Dak Prescott more than they want to pay him by simply allowing him to walk if they're willing to run, which is a substantial risk, and make a trade up to 3. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if they let him walk, right, the true leverage is, you can walk out that door, all right, who's going to pay him $30, $35 million? Tell me the team. Tell me where it exists. Would the Raiders be interested? Probably. But at that number, probably not. You tell me that Dak is that much better than Derek Carr, who I think it's $18 million. No, he's not. His value is in the Cowboys. It's basically what Emmett Smith said. Hey, dude, take a little bit less. You can make a bunch on the back end with the endorsements. And I get that when Emmett's talking, it feels like you can barely see Jerry Jones' lips moving, right? There's a great ventriloquist act. But what he's saying is closer to the truth than you think. Would the Dolphins want him? Sure. At $35 million? No. No. And we all freaked out over Kirk Cousins. How could the Washington Redskins not love Kirk Cousins? And then Kirk Cousins signs a 3-year guaranteed deal, which, by the way, is limiting the Minnesota Vikings and put them in cap hell. And Kirk Cousins is exactly what we think. He's good to a point. You know, he's good to a point. That's what Dak Prescott is. And everyone who seems to know anything about football says, Tua's got a chance to be better. Tua's likely to be better. Look, I'm just as nervous about the hip as anybody, if not more so, because you have no idea, you know, how it's going to heal, how it's going to look. But you do know that when healthy, that guy took Alabama's offense from one of the most boring things on earth to absolute lightning in a bottle. He's accurate. He's a leader. He's athletic enough in the pocket to be a modern-day quarterback. And he's got a strong arm that can make every throw and is shown in the biggest of big games he will come through. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he would cost you $20 million at minimum less than Dak Prescott would cost you. Oh, and I might want to throw in the fact that he's left-handed. There's no other left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL, but he would be playing for a former left-handed quarterback who's his offensive coordinator. It's not so crazy when you think about it. Dallas Cowboys want to be bold, and Tua just happens to say, you know, if I could pick any team, be the Cowboys. Huh. We might be able to make that work. Crazy, Joy?
I mean, it would be exciting. I don't know how much Dallas would have to give up to move up that far.
Yeah, they'd move up from 17 to 3. That's
substantial. A lot.
And there is precedent for this on some levels, right? Remember, the Philadelphia Eagles had re-signed Sam Bradford, and then they moved up to end up drafting Carson Wentz. And look, Carson Wentz has had an injury-plagued career, and he's on that second contract or whatever. But I think if you asked the Philadelphia Eagles, do you have your franchise quarterback? And I believe Dak is better than Sam Bradford. I'm not calling him Sam Bradford. He hasn't broken down like Sam Bradford.
Right.
He's not as accurate as Sam Bradford, but I like Dak Prescott better as a quarterback in the NFL for the next 10 years than I did Sam at that point. But it has happened before, and I do think it worked for the Eagles. They didn't win the Super Bowl because of him, but they were in position to get to the Super Bowl because of him. He would have been the MVP. They were the best team in football.
I mean, I think this is, you know, we're getting close to the draft.
Yes.
So we're, you know, pulling at every thread here. I don't think he's saying this in that this is something that's going to happen. It's just kind of interesting.
Yes.
I personally feel like the Cowboys should re-sign Dak. Obviously, they're going to have to overpay him in order to make that happen, but I don't know.
But I'm offering up. Do they have to overpay him?
They don't.
Right.
No, but you better have a plan.
Yes. And this is a possible plan.
It's a possibility.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Somehow I got his green drink today, which Sarah is wonderful. Thank you so much. Kale, lemon, ginger, celery, cucumbers, green apple.
Very healthy.
I feel like a new man.
I didn't know it
was. My hair
all
is
that.
Not graying, and I'm not thinking about going to Park City, but I feel like a new man. If you wonder what powers The Herd, That's apparently what it is.
That's good stuff.
It is good stuff. It's not that dissimilar from some of the things that Tom Brady only eats, right? Doesn't drink beer
and
in
Colin
season.
Colin does love Tom Brady.
He does love him some Tom Brady. So the latest story from Colin and my previous home, Schefter and Jeff Darlington, I believe, combined with the Tennessee is the leader. Tennessee is the leader. There's in the pecking order, there's Tennessee, and then there's Vegas, and then there's New England. And now, look, I've talked to a lot of people in the NFL, and they've all talked to Brady's people, and they've all said kind of something different and something similar in that he's willing and he may want to leave. And he's got, but they all have, maybe you should go to Tampa. Well, maybe it's the Chargers. Ah, what about Indy? Tennessee. Now, of course, this does make some sense because unlike any of those other possible destinations, there are New England ties with their head coach. I don't think you walk into a room where you don't know anybody. Don't know anybody else. That's really, really hard when you're changing jobs at this point in his career. But I just don't buy it. I don't buy that the Raiders story that they're going to offer him 2 years, $60 million, just happens to leak last week, just like this one happens to leak this week. This is classic leverage negotiating 101. Right? First, you throw out money. Then you thought, hey, destination. You know, not only is it Nashville, a team that beats you, a coach that, you know, used to play with him, that they're friends, they have a relationship, a running game, tax-free state, burgeoning market. But come on, does Tom Brady play for the Tennessee Titans? That just doesn't slide off the tongue. Right? If he goes to, it's not like they're a Tom Brady away from winning a Super Bowl, are they? Remember, we're in the AFC now. You're going to have to beat the Chiefs and the Ravens. Right? Those quarterbacks are still rising into their prime. Now, you can tell me there'll be a hangover for the Chiefs, maybe. You can tell me Lamar Jackson still doesn't want a playoff game, and I'd agree with you, and I'm, like anybody, concerned that the league is going to catch up to what Lamar's doing. But I'd also point out to you that he was in New England. All they need is a couple of skill position guys. Continue to work with that offensive line. This is not something that they haven't tried to do. To the people out there who want to say, well, the New England Patriots, they haven't surrounded Tom Brady with the weapons that he needs. You're not wrong. But it's not for lack of trying. And remember, you go back 2 years ago, they brought in like six wide receivers, and many of them got hurt. Some of them got cut. They tried. This year, you still had Antonio Brown that you picked up. You traded for Mohamed Sanu, and you had Josh Gordon. Sanu doesn't look like he has anything left. Josh Gordon's a knucklehead. Antonio Brown's a knucklehead. You had to get rid of them both. Like, on paper, if you would have said, hey, if you add Josh Gordon or Antonio Brown or Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown to Tom Brady and you throw Mohamed Sanu, you're like, okay, you're good enough. And they weren't because they couldn't keep those two guys on the football field. They haven't been able to find the next Rob Gronkowski. You know what? It's kind of hard to find the next Rob Gronkowski. Lots of teams have drafted their next Gronk and they've struck out. But if that's all you need to add, why do you think we're hearing this? This, again, from Adam Schefter and Jeff Darlington. He made Tennessee out to be more of an option than I realized it could be, Schefter said. In his mind, to rank the teams right now, it would be Tennessee, Vegas, and New England. I think we all need to pay a little bit more attention to Tennessee than we thought. Look, he's not going to play for the Chargers. Chargers have all the skill position guys you could possibly ever need. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, and they'll re-sign Hunter Henry. You know, we'll see what happens with Melvin Gordon. But even without Melvin Gordon, you got Austin Eckler. Like, they got plenty of dudes. On defense, you're going to get Derwin James back and Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. Like, the Chargers are stacked. The problem with the Chargers are offensive line, organization, doesn't really know anybody. Maybe seventh most popular NFL team in L.A. NFL team, they're probably the seventh most popular. Like, eh. Okay, well, that worked. Vegas. All right, taxes make sense. Raiders, Gruden loves quarterbacks, but Gruden has his way of doing things, which in no way is like how Brady does things. And the Raiders have been good once in the last 18 years. Since John Gruden beat them in the Super Bowl, a team that he helped build, they've been good once in the last, been in the playoffs once. Tom Brady is synonymous with longevity, but it's longevity of success. So you're going to go to an organization that, though their commitment was to excellence, it was more of a commitment to excrement than anything else for a long period of time. Don't get me wrong. I'm a buyer into what Gruden's doing. I just don't think they're a Tom Brady away. And the idea that Tom Brady is going to implement a whole new system with a coach that has his own way of playing the position, I don't see it. And then there's Tennessee. All right, you got Derrick Henry. He's a great running back. Great running back. And they had a good season. And they beat the Patriots. But so many things had to come together for them just to get into the playoffs. As opposed to New England, who you can stamp that they'll be in the playoffs. They did have the better defense. I don't think he wants to leave. And I think the more options that we hear thrown out, the more it appears they're just clawing at some sort of possible way to create leverage. Maybe it's Tennessee, or maybe it's Los Angeles, or maybe it's Tampa, or maybe it's Vegas, or maybe you just want somebody to make New England make you feel wanted. And that ain't how they roll. It's never been how they roll.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He played 14 years in the NBA, three-time first-team All-NBA defense. He's Tony Allen. He's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. T.A., thanks so much for joining us. By the way, if you want to hear about Tony's high school career, where he played football under an assumed name, right? What was the name you played under?
I don't remember.
You don't remember the name?
I don't remember.
Played it because he wasn't academically eligible, so they gave him somebody else's name to play football at his first high school. You can download the All Ball podcast with me and Tony Allen. We went for like an hour, and it was The stories are spectacular, spectacular.
There ain't no mystery in the history.
There is no mystery, but your history isn't known to everybody, and we brought some of that out. You're still involved with the Grizzlies, with their G League team. You get a chance to see Ja Morant. And as much as Zion is breathtaking and the 10 games we've seen him, he's been as good as advertised. What's the ceiling for Ja Morant?
Sky's the limit, I believe. Here's a guy, man, is very poised. I see a lot of veteran savvy in him. I see him talking to his ball club in the huddle. I see him getting guys in position out of timeouts. You know, normally it takes guys 3 to 4 years to probably grab a locker room and understand that that's their leader. He's taking a leadership role, expanding with it. These guys are fighting for AFC right now. He's been healthy all year. He's been with his ball club all year. And I just like his ceiling right now.
Okay, so if there's one thing he needs to continue to work on to take that next step, because there's so many lead guards. I mean, and obviously we see that when we see the highlights, it's the jaw-dropping athleticism. But if there's some, if you're like, man, we got to get in the lab in the summer, and this is what we need to continue to refine. What is it?
And I would say his outside shooting, and not that it's bad or anything. It's more so just a high volume of shooting. Like maybe he's probably shooting maybe 2 threes a game now. Let's get that up to maybe 4, 5, or 6. You know what I'm saying? Like the other competitive guards that's in the league, like Curry, you know, the all-star guys. Just get him to do that. But everything else, he's relentless. You've been seeing him with game-winning dunks, jaw-dropping passes. The kid's averaging 8 assists. And everything he does is within the system. And a lot of razzle-dazzle, you know, highlights, but it's within the system. And that's what I like most importantly.
You know what's fascinating about him, and in the podcast when we sat down, you didn't play AAU, you didn't know anything about it kind of growing up. Ja did play AAU basketball, but not at a high level, right? Like he played in a couple of tournaments with Zion.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that he is not, he doesn't have, you know, like, look, even when I play, we got free everything, shoes, travel, sweats, whatever, swag. And now put that kind of on steroids now where dudes get everything handed to them. So there's a little bit of entitlement. He doesn't have that, right? There's like a natural, normal, it may be expected to be in the NBA, he doesn't play like an entitled kid. He plays like he's excited for every game. Is that real, the vibe he gives off?
Most definitely. He has a swagger. He plays free. He's fun. You know, he's always smiling. I love the jaw goggles when he make a nice little pass or what have you. But here's a kid, man, you could tell loves the game. Very excited to be in the NBA. It's a privilege, not a right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's taking advantage of that. And like I say, man, if the vote was to end today, I would have to say Ja.
As rookie of the year?
Rookie of the year. Because we kind of like highlight Zion's comeback, but we don't realize that Ja's been doing this all year long.
Tony Allen, who Kobe Bryant said did the best job on him defensively of anybody in the NBA. It's we're not yet a month removed, right? They're going to have the memorial this weekend at Staples Center. As you kind of continue to process it, you've had death in your life, right? You grew up hardscrabble, tough streets of Chicago. Where are you in processing that Kobe Bryant's no longer of this earth?
It's still registering. Like I was saying on numerous podcasts, like I visioned him doing everything Jordan did. You know what I mean? From the mimics of his game to possibly owning the team, his shoes, sneakers selling after he's done playing, and just being that guy. You know what I mean? And it's kind of tough for everybody right now. But for me, I just feel like I just didn't get an opportunity to, you know, get a chance to get a friendship or, you know, talk about some of our battles, you know?
Yeah, because you said you wanted to sit down with him and talk to him, talk ball with him, and never really kind of got that opportunity.
Never got that opportunity. We were so competitive on the court and so focused in on who was going to get the win and help our ball club. We kind of got away from that with the strength of schedule or whatever, but, man, it's a loss for everybody.
What was he like during the NBA Finals when you played against him?
Well, in the NBA Finals, he was all seek and destroy. You can tell from the drives to, you know, how he get on one of his teammates. He wanted it more. you could tell, you know what I mean? Like, it was up another level whenever you got on the court with Kobe.
Tony Allen joining us. I want to ask you about Russell Westbrook, because Russell grew up idolizing Kobe, as so many did, but also in Los Angeles, and worked with him some. And, you know, last night he gets thrown out of a blowout game. I don't know why he's in the game when they're up 35 in the fourth quarter, but he is. And he said, Wilson's my only friend, right? Like, basketball's my only friend. Do you think ultimately it works out in Houston? Like, I actually like the idea of going all small ball. Like, forget the big dudes. They can't play. Let's get some guards. And especially for him, he's shooting less threes, and he's more effective, and the lane is completely wide open. But does it work in Houston? Can they ever get to that next level?
Well, we've seen year after year those guys show great signs of being a team to watch. But they haven't showed me no signs of championship pedigree, if you ask me. You know, when I look at teams like the Warriors, you see a lot of continuity on the offense. They're moving, passing the ball. Everybody's cutting. You got a wing guard on the weak side setting a flare on the big. Just all type of movement. When I watch the Rockets, I don't see that. I see one guy puts his head down, dribble, 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 jump in the air and look for one of the corner guys for the three. After a while, you know, in the playoffs, you know, we study film, we watch film, you get accustomed to what they're trying to do. And I think that lightens up the load for the defense. And I don't think they can win games like that.
The Clippers have some guys, which I'm sure you like, you know, Pat Bev. Everybody likes Pat Bev, right? Some junkyard dogs the way you play. Now they went and got another one. They went and got Reggie Jackson. Okay. But is there a too many guys like that problem, right? When you have too many guys that have fought, like, look, Reggie was a bench player in Oklahoma City, wanted his own team, got his own team and a new contract in Detroit, right? And now all of a sudden he's going to have to go back to being a bench guy and to getting fewer minutes. They have a lot of guys that want it really bad, but could there be too many dudes like that with the Clippers?
No, not necessarily. If you got a ball club that everybody understands their role, and Doc Rivers is a coach for sure. One thing for sure, two for certain, he's going to get some role defined within his ball club. And I know that from playing with him, but if Reggie want to expand his career from this point on, I think he should be coming in thinking, okay, when I come in the game, we either going to build a lead or it's going to stay the same. Like, he's not trying to do too much. Being a piece to a puzzle is a mindset. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You got to be ready to come through on your part of the deal.
But it seems to be increasingly difficult because you don't have Paul George all the time. You don't have Kawhi Leonard. So your role is going to be different night in, night out, right? Some nights on back-to-backs, you might get to play a ton. When the two stars are back, you might not get to play. I understand, like, once you understand, accept, and buy into your role, but he didn't have a preseason, he didn't have a first half of the season, and the roles change throughout the second half of the season because those guys aren't there. That makes it increasingly difficult even for Doc to assign those roles because they change night to night.
Yeah, and that's where the professionalism come in. I remember in 2008, we won the championship. P.J. Brown, he came in just sitting at the house. You know, he came in, got in shape. You know, some nights he didn't play. Some games we blew people out, he got in. Some games we were losing. About 30, he get in. But it's all about getting yourself acclimated, being a professional, and understanding what your piece is to the puzzle.
Joel Embiid had a great night last night. Ben Simmons didn't play. And he said, you know, like, part of his mentality is trying to be the show that he's the best player in the world. I think he might be the most talented dude in the league. Like, a 7-footer. Did you see the Euro step he put on last night?
He traveled.
He did travel, but still, just the dexterity he has for a dude that big to move like that, shoot, defend the rim.
True
that. Is it Simmons that's – what holds him back from doing this more consistently?
Now, me being a non-shooter, you know, I can understand why they're trying to put it on Simmons and all this stuff. But these guys, I believe, are great together. It's just going to take a little bit of one of these guys being the most dominant. Like, who wants to demand the ball more and feel like we're going to take it on my shoulder? Ben Simmons is not the problem. I want to say that now. He kind of got a little Tony Allen in him. You know, you pass the ball, go in the corner, or get in the dunker spot, which you could still be creative. You could get offensive rebounds. You can get your team extra possessions. And I think they could be well, but they just got to get out of the hoopla. Just don't worry about what's going on out there. He just got to get down in that block, bang, 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 and do the jump hooks, right, left hand, until that stop. Then you get out there on that three and start shooting them threes. But if he could do this at a high level consistently, greatest big man in the league.
Let me ask you about the Lakers. They can't get Darren Collison to come out of retirement. They thought they were going to. They don't make a trade for any of their guards. It's Rondo and Caruso.
Shout out to Rondo.
Rondo, yeah, but Rondo was great when he was with you. That was 2008, man. That's 12 years ago.
Hey, man, you can't underestimate the heart of a champ. Remember that.
I understand Rudy Tomjanovich's great quote does resonate. Do the Lakers have enough?
Well, obviously, they got a lot of added motivation with the loss of Kobe. But I would have to say, I would have to get an edge to the Lakers simply because Anthony Davis is the new piece. He has the most to prove leaving New Orleans. But with everything that's going on in L.A. right now, I think it's a toss-up, Doug. I can't really say, man, because the Clippers haven't showed me a consistency of everybody being fully healthy and going consecutive games on the same page. So the Lakers been jailing all year. If I had to pick, I would go with the Lakers.
All right, if you had to pick Fury or Wilder, who'd you pick? I got 15 seconds.
I got Wilder. That's right, my boy. Wilder.
Well, he's got a hell of a punch.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Stop me if you've heard this before, but Kyrie Irving is injured. Now, look, I never cheer for injury, ever, ever, ever. I am the guy that watches injuries over and over and over again on my phone or on any device because I'm that guy, right? I've said this before. There's three types of people in this world. There's types of people that I don't want to see it. There's types of people that say type two is I want to watch it once just so I can catalog it. And then there's type of people that, man, I can't believe that guy's leg broke in half. Let me watch that again. Let me call up my friends. Let me send it to my buddies. Let me make it into a meme. That's me. That's who I am. Kyrie's injury this time, not gruesome, not graphic, not Gordon Hayward breaking his leg so you could see the bone sticking out, not Paul George. Oh, my God, his leg scratched the floor at Thomas and Mack. You remember that? There was actually a scratch on the floor from the bone in his leg. It was awesome. It was amazing, let's be honest. Like, Paul George is fine. Fine, okay? He's fine. So I'm that guy. Sorry. So this isn't about his injury. It's the fact that he's always hurt. Like, Kyrie Irving is always hurt. He hurt his big toe when he was at Duke, right? He's hurt his shoulders. He had the knee. Even after he had the knee fixed, and he hurt the knee, remember, game one of their first NBA Finals. Then he comes back, and when he had the knee fixed, and it was in Boston, like, there's bad luck. He had the meshing that was in his knee, like, to keep the thing together because the kneecap had broken apart. That was irritating. And they took that out. Then he had, like, an infected screw. Like, the guy's got bad luck and just a body that breaks down. Oh, yeah, and there's his team's record is better when he's not playing. Oh, and as Joy pointed out, their culture was fun last year. And now it's sort of fun, but sort of like, we'll wait till next year when we're more competitive. You know, remember, this is the same Kyrie Irving who earlier this year named six guys that he wanted, they felt like were good enough to win with. And there are 15 guys in an NBA roster, right? And he's like, well, I should have. No, you did what you always do, which is maybe you're too honest. Maybe you're too opinionated. Maybe you have too many thoughts in your mind. Whatever it is, Kyrie's a guy who, look, when he left Cleveland, and it was an awful trade. Like, Isaiah Thomas lasted for 5 minutes in Cleveland coming off, and he had the bad hip. But when they made that trade, you would have thought Cleveland would fall off almost like jumping off a bridge. And though their regular season record was worse without Kyrie Irving, who is a superstar talent. Like, don't let anybody tell you that Gottlieb told you, well, Kyrie can't play. No, no, no. He might be the most talented guard of all of them. He doesn't shoot as well as Lillard, but he's a way better finisher. He's a better passer than Damian Lillard. He's, again, not the shooter of Steph, and he doesn't always want to play defense, but when he wants to, he can. But sometimes he wants to guard the other team's best player. Like last year in Boston, if you watch them at times in the playoffs, he's trying to, he even though it wasn't on the scouting report, he's trying to guard the other team's best player, and they're going by him. He leaves Cleveland, and though their regular season record isn't as good, they did go to the NBA Finals without him, did they not? He goes to Boston, and though everything was seemingly going well, he gets hurt, and they go to the Eastern Conference Finals without him. He comes back, and they're worse because of it. Now he goes to Brooklyn, where they had great culture. They're fun, energetic. Everybody liked what they were doing. Now it's like, eh, and they're better without him. Then you factor in next year they're going to add Kevin Durant, who's, you know, going to be 31, coming off an Achilles tendon tear, who also is kind of like, all right, well, I've done the dominant ISO ball in Oklahoma City, but there wasn't enough space. When we had to share the ball at Golden State, there was space, and I was the best player on the planet. This is a different team. We have ball movement. I'm a ball stopper. So what does Durant look like off the Achilles tendon? What does Durant look like within how they play? What does Durant look like with Kyrie Irving, who he's never played an NBA regular season game with? And then you have Kyrie Irving, who struggles with how he wants to lead, but he's not really a good leader, and no one seems to be able to tell him, like, hey, you're not actually a good leader. And what happens if Brooklyn has some success, makes the playoffs, and does well without him again? Tell me there's something more interesting than watching the Brooklyn Nets, who were fun, playing a cool arena. They're kind of in the biggest market in the country, kind of. Like they're like the seventh most popular professional sports franchise in the metro, in the tri-state area. And they have two of the most talented dudes to put on sneakers. And you have Kevin Durant, who keeps changing his story as to why he's done what he's done. And you got Kyrie Irving, who, if you don't think he knows everything, ask him, he'll tell you. Kevin Durant ain't giving up burner accounts, and Kyrie Irving ain't giving up trying to be a leader. I can't wait for him to get back next year. We're going to have to wait, but there is nothing more interesting than what's going on in Brooklyn for all the wrong reasons. Oh, yeah, and the right reason is they're, like, super talented. And I think Sean Marks, from death's door, has resurrected that franchise. But how does it end? What is the end game to it?